Ready to go? Call a meeting to order.
Where is the old fellow?
I don't know. We'll find out real quick.
He's got to use up that time.
Okay, if we call for a moment of silence, please. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, just a piece of housekeeping. If anyone has a cell phone or other electronic device, if they could please turn it off. I appreciate that. Roll call.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Perry Robinson.
Here.
Clark Cotner.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson has requested to be excused.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Can I ask the reason he asked to be excused?
I don't know for sure, but it sounded like maybe it was something that was already pre-planned.
Okay, the agenda indicates that we were going to have an executive session at this time, and that has been canceled. Next, we'll go on to recognition and awards. And we have Terry Johnson with a certificate of appreciation.
That has been canceled tonight. He will actually be here now on the 10th of June.
10th of June. Okay, audience participation. Do we have anyone that has signed up to speak this evening? No. Apparently there are none. Next we'll go on to commission, committee, and board reports. The Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee, Clark.
We had a meeting last week discussed the current postponed economy. And we'll have another meeting probably this week.
Okay. Bonnie, Blaine Chamber of Commerce.
No report for Chamber or Red Loan.
Okay. WTA, Paul.
Is those of you who have been following this know there was a proposal by the staff of the WTA to change the routing on the 55 bus to improve service. There were three changes proposed, one dealing with Ferndale, one dealing with the industrial park, and one dealing with Birch Bay. There was a fair amount of public opposition to the one dealing with Birch Bay. The staff has withdrawn it in recognition of the public public opposition. So it's a nice case. There's often the feeling that a public hearing is pro forma and nothing much is going to happen because everybody's already decided what they're going to do. But in this case, as in all of the cases that I've seen with WTA, input genuinely is sought, input genuinely is accepted and followed. So I think it's a victory for the people who, in fact, protested the proposed changes.
Okay. Drayton Harbor Fish, Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
Last meeting they had representatives from the state and county talking about the fecal coliform counts and up to date, and things are getting better. One of the good news is, though, that the state is removing the month of February as a prohibited month to harvest oysters out of the Drayton Harbor. So the closure will only be November, December, and January now because those are the rainiest months and create the washes down the California Creek, Dakota Creek tributaries that affect the quality of the oysters in the wintertime. So, big deal. Got 1 month back. So, anyway, that was big news.
Okay, thank you, Charlie. Library Committee and Senior Center Liaison Dennis.
Nothing right now.
Okay. Planning Commission, Michael Jones.
Nothing from the Planning Commission or the Park and Cemetery Board, sir.
Chief Heslop is not here. There's no report on the Small City Caucus or the Whatcom Council of Government. And Chief Hollander is not here.
Your Honor?
Yes, ma'am.
The chief did provide the information as far as the fire district response activity for April of 2013, which I provided with your agendas.
Okay.
So you do have that.
Thank you. Okay, next we'll go on to the city manager and staff reports. Okay, staff, Public Works, Mr. Jeff.
Bill? Bill Bullitt, Assistant Public Works Director. Basically, what we're doing right now is wrapping up the Harvey Ord Waterline project. Got just a few final touches to add when we get clear weather, obviously. And then that project will be pretty much wrapped up. We're currently negotiating scope of work and fee with the preferred consultant for the Boblet signalization project for design, and hopefully we'll wrap that up here in the next couple weeks and bring it to potentially the next council meeting. And then the other things that are kind of on our radar is getting ready for the 4th of July and our summer events and whatnot in Public Works. Other than that, things are pretty steady.
Any questions for Bill?
I have just something. When I pulled into the, drove into the, off of H Street into the parking lot that serves the liquor outlet. And a new concrete apron was poured there. There's quite a drop off. My back wheels just kind of bumped down. Is that going to be addressed?
Oh, no, I'll look into it.
Can you just check it?
Yeah, thank you.
Chief Haslip is not here, so Jeff, I don't, we have nothing on public safety. Yes?
That's correct.
Yeah. Thank you. Community Development Services.
As you know, we've been working on some concepts and moving forward with a consolidated mitigation site and using the airport to do that in order to facilitate economic development on commercial properties and manufacturing properties in the Cane Creek watershed. As part of some of our research, I've been talking with Jennifer Ayler from Eldred and Associates, a consulting group that's worked on a similar project in another city, and it was really interesting. So I thought that I asked her to come up and give a short presentation to you to see how it was used somewhere else, and so you get a better flavor of what the concept is and what all is involved in what we're looking at moving forward on. So Jennifer's here. We have a presentation. It should be just a few minutes, and then she's available, obviously, to answer any questions you have on how it worked at another site. Yeah, we'll just take a second for the TV's form. I'll get to go.
Yeah. Good evening, Council. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you for coming.
Can I talk just a little? Did I hear somebody?
I said thank you for coming.
Thank you. Don't be
it's very hard to see you with the, you've got these blind situations.
Yeah. It's my holy glow behind me.
Well, yes, you do have a glow. And
I like being here.
Yeah. It's, we have a real lighting problem in this place because people just sort of disappear and
that's
when we look at you. Thank you.
We'll touch a little bit tonight on a concept called consolidated offsite mitigation for wetlands. And you may have heard the term wetland mitigation banking or wetland banking, and they're technical terms, and I'll try to keep this just really general. I've lived and breathed this for many years, so forgive me if I get a little bit in-depth. It's what I've done. I'm the owner of a firm called Eldred & Associates. We're a land use planning firm. We specialize in long-range planning, current permitting, and then grants and project management, how do you fund the projects that go on. Out of my 22-year career, I spent half of it behind the government staff and city and county government role, and half behind the consulting counter, of which 4.5 years was nothing but wetland mitigation banking. So I've got a fairly good experience in what we're going to go through tonight. So I thought tonight we'd just touch a little bit on what is consolidated offsite mitigation. Mike and I first started talking, we were chatting a little bit about kind of a city-owned bank or what that looks like, and I know this is more of a mouthful of consolidated offsite mitigation, but the bank has a technical connotation, and perhaps more importantly, a long regulatory requirement that I don't think would behoove you. So the consolidated offsite, while it's a mouthful, truly makes more sense in this instance. So we'll just run through a little bit what it is, what it isn't, how it works, and then more than anything, I'm here to show you an example, and then to be here for questions mostly. I think that perhaps is more effective. So I've got about 12 slides, and you've seen two of them, so we're moving quickly. So I was asked once to describe what is consolidated offsite mitigation. I coined the term, it's environmental subdivision, if you will. So just like a neighborhood, you would come in and lay out lots for houses. Similarly, you would lay out an environmental design, and people come in and can purchase the mitigation credits off top, where you design the whole thing as a whole, and all the technical studies are done up front, and it's designed as to function as completely, but it's developed on an individual basis as the need moves forward, so it really functions a lot like a subdivision. The underlying property ownership is still owned, in this case, by the city, and it's just the mitigation rights on top that are sold off as time goes by. Construction is permitted at the time of the wetland impact, which is nearby but off-site. So if a developer off-site wanted to develop a lot for commercial development, they were stepping on a wetland and they needed a little bit of a wetland credit, they could come over to the consolidated site and build their wetland site here in order to be able to sort of offset some of those functions and values in order to build nearby. So that's kind of how it works, if that makes sense. Typically on a consolidated site, somebody comes in and purchases the property up front. In this case, the city already owns it, so that's out of the way. As I mentioned, the site is designed how it would function cohesively as a habitat project up front, all at once. All the technical reports are done up front. We've got a wetland delineation report required, archaeological reports, hydrology. All of those are done, again, to have this property function cohesively. The site is permitted up front, but it isn't built until those impacts come along a little bit later on the development site. And then that's kind of required through the 4044 on the permitting site. So why would you want to do this? Wetlands scare the daylights out of a heck of a lot of developers. When they see there's a wetland on site, they tuck tail and run because it's unknown, it's complicated, it's the Corps of Engineers, it's ecology. I work with this all day long, this is what I do. They don't bother me a bit. But if the city can take some of that mystique and that concern away from it and address a problem in advance that you know is there, then it becomes a known factor, and it just becomes simply the cost of developing a site. And that, I think, can oftentimes make the difference between a site being developable and perhaps not being developable. The time shaves off greatly. When we've done that entitlement work up front, we've created those technical studies and we've designed it up front, and it's been blessed by the agencies. That takes off the mitigation side on a project, so the permits go through considerably faster. So I talked a little bit about the things that are included in an off-site mitigation project. Typically, there's a financial pro forma or a study. Is this a good idea from a market effective standpoint? Is there a market? In this instance, the city knows, you know your area well. You've got a small defined two sub-basins, drainage sub-basins. You know where the wetlands are, you know the properties they're inquired on regularly that have the wetland impacts, you know that there's a market. Check that one off, that's easy. The habitat restoration plan, I've touched on some of those technical studies that will be required. Some of them are already available and they're done. The phase one environmental site assessment's done. So you've got some of the work that's been completed. There would be a long-term management plan required from the agencies when it's all built out and the habitat project is done. How do we maintain that for a little while? Then there's a construction plan and a planting plan that's required, and then some monitoring. There's some financial assurances and some standards that you have to meet on, you know, having maintained your performance criteria. Oftentimes there's a financial pro forma that a decision will go into. Does this make financial sense? Again, this is a little bit different situation in that you own the property up front. That's usually a big decision point. Sales forecast, you know, how soon do you think that there would be a market? But again, in this instance, it's a smaller piece of property in a smaller area, and you know that you've got a known demand. So a lot of these questions have already been answered. Michael and I have talked a lot about some of the, what the agencies would look at this and the level of support that we have, the federal and state level for moving forward with a project like this. And some of the general administrative expenses are covered. covered within the city, so it's a really nice platform to be able to put forward a very cost-effective project.
But if I understand correctly, we would still put one of these together for the agencies to be able to understand how the city is, would implement this and has the capacity to move forward. So even though for us we may not need to do all that research and analysis because we have an entity here that has administrative capacity, we already own the land, a lot of the decision-making factors are kind of already a given for us, the agencies will still want to understand, do you have the capacity to move forward on this? So we'll be preparing some of that.
By the way, the pictures you see as we go along, these are all mitigation sites that we've worked on and worked through. So as you see these, they're lovely green pictures, but these are all similar projects that have been going on. The maintenance period required is usually 5 to 10 years. I think it's primarily 10 at this point. And the agencies are really looking for, if you, they've allowed an impact of functions and values of wetlands here in order to have similar functions and values created here, they want to be sure that those have been effectively moved. And that's what the monitoring period does, is it shows how that's been attained. Things like, sometimes we have to irrigate for the first couple of years. I know that sounds crazy, Northwest Washington, but sometimes we still have to make sure that our plants are growing as we need to. We get some weeds in the Northwest and where we go, making sure that those aren't taking over some of our wetland plants. We have performance standards that there's ranges that you have to maintain at a certain percentage of survival of the plants that are planted, making sure that those are indeed meeting those replacement criteria. And again, it's a 5 to 10 year performance maintenance time that will be required to make sure that we're maintaining these functions and values as we agree to do so.
The maintenance is done by the city or the developer?
Well, that depends. That's an internal business decision on if that's something the city wants to take on or if that's something that wants to be contracted out. The permit requires the authority under the Clean Water Act, the 404 and 401 permitting. By legal standard at the federal level, that has to be the responsibility of the applicant, the developer. Mm-hmm. The city can then contract and take that back as doing the site as a whole if they choose to. We're going to maintain the site as a whole. That's part of what you're getting for what you pay for, as we'll take care of that. So that's an internal business decision.
Okay. Now, obviously, if we do it, if we decide to take on that responsibility, it will add cost for the developer because we'll need to be compensated for that work that we'll need to do over those years. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if they have to do it themselves, they would have paid someone. So Jennifer said, mm-hmm. it really becomes a business decision from the perspective of the city. Do we want comprehensive control over the site, manage it all the same way, manage it all at the same time, maintain it all at the same time, or do we want to, because we also, you have to remember, we're the regulators, so we're going to be checking on some of these things. Mm-hmm. So if, for example, we're managing the maintenance contract. I know when the person came and I know what they did. And I know if it was satisfactory and I'm going to pay them or not pay them based on that satisfaction. Yeah. Whereas if I'm reviewing five different reports from five different companies that came in at different times and we're going out and checking, it actually on some level is easier from a regulatory perspective for us to just do it. But it adds cost and administrative need. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
We'll have to make that decision, but there are.
Yeah, I think
ways. That
makes a lot more sense. But if someone's purchasing a certain, that means they just take care of their acre, mm-hmm. you know, and then anything outside of that, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
It makes more sense for the city to do it.
Sometimes it will. Yeah, exactly.
But anyway.
There are other issues in long-term management besides just did your weeds grow up and choke out your plants and have your plants actually, you know, met the performance criteria. In an urban area, sometimes we find shopping carts or litter or, you know, this is a smaller community, but we've also, you know, we've seen homeless camps move into a restoration site. So, you know, I've seen some drug folks moving into some of these sites as well. So just who's using it, including animals. Sometimes when you create a habitat site, there haven't been critters there that you put a certain habitat that now you get new critters that you haven't had there before. So, you know, more than just plants and water, we have to take a peek at, you know, are there animals or humans that are using it that isn't the way that we agree to, keeping the garbage out. And then oftentimes there'll be what's required, a long-term non-wasting endowment account, kind of a bond, if you will, that runs the duration of the project, that should something happen, that there's funding to go in and pay to make sure that those functions and values. So again, it's that protection that we're moving some benefits, some ecological benefits from here to there, and some funding to make sure that those functions really are protected. So this is just a picture of, there's two off-site mitigation projects that are here. This is down in Mount Vernon, you see the Skagit River in there. But you see these are right next to an urban area, so this is a neat mitigation picture. There's the site on the left is sort of the long obligated, it's almost like California, of a long pond right there. And then the one just to the right of that is a series of ponds. So those are kind of scooped out, and they're in the very early stages of construction. This is right after heavy rain, so they're fairly full of water. But, just showing that you can have good mitigation sites that are going in next to an urban area. So that was the benefit of this slide. But then this is really the project I want to talk about. And I've got these two binders. No heart attacks, please. These are an example of a project called Blackjack Creek, and it's over outside of Silverdale, over on the peninsula. And this is about a 60-acre site that you can see on the outside of the perimeter. It's a 60-acre piece that a company I formerly worked with called Wildlands. This is all they do is this large wetland banking and off-site consolidated mitigation. The picture on the left, you can see the stream goes pretty much at a diagonal through there. It's a ditch stream. It's called Blackjack Creek, and it's ditched and it's straight. On the right, you can see all the meanders have been put in. So on the right is the picture that shows all the habitat design features. And you can't read them all. There's log jams. There's all kinds of habitat features on the engineered drawings that are shown in there. But picture on the left is what it looks like. Picture on the right is what it's going to be look like. And then there's two sub-boxes on the picture on the right. And those were two users that came in. One was for Home Depot, and one was for the Washington State Department of Transportation. They each needed consolidated off-site mitigation, so they did just that. Our company came in and bought the 60-acre piece, designed it out, created, these are the technical studies that were required. And then the clients came in one at a time, and they purchased just the mitigation piece by piece until that site sold out. So these are what are called individual permits through the Corps of Engineers, which means they impacted more than half an acre of a wetland. So these are big. The size of your mitigation project here in town would require probably what are called nationwide permits, which are less than a half an acre. And they're much smaller than this. So don't lose sight in what the size and the girth is. But I just wanted to be able to thumb through and see that this has been done somewhere else successfully and it really did work. So I'll just let you know.
You've made Dennis's day. You've made Dennis's day.
And again, the main purpose of this was just to give you someone who has been involved in actually doing one before to ask questions in real time and to give you a little bit more over, kind of a conceptual overview of this. So if you have a few questions for Jennifer while she's here, this is a great opportunity. We won't have a lot of the answers necessarily, but she has the experience of having done this before.
Jennifer, if I may, when people buy Indivis, do they buy specific acreage? I own this quarter of an acre over here, you own that quarter of an acre, or are the owners tenants in common?
They buy specific, legally described, legal description, surveyed in with the survey of the mitigation rights in that area. The underlying land stayed with the landowner.
Right.
But they're buying legally described so that it's unique and specific. This mitigation goes with that project, and there's a line. You see the line between the two?
Mm-hmm.
The next mitigation site goes to the next project. We can't commingle them. It's one for one. It's A for A, B for B.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, when a site is developed fully, is that a Category 1 wetland then?
That's a great question. It depends on the design, and it depends on the project.
Is that the most that you could get out of a site is to develop it to that point?
You can get to a Category 1 if that's what the site wanted to be or perhaps once was. That's the idea, is that you're taking a site back to typically what it once was. In this instance, it was a dredged, diked, stream system that we were putting it back into what it was, naturally before it had been farmed, and oftentimes diking is a real classic example of when we've altered the hydrology, break the dikes and see what comes back in. The idea isn't necessarily to just automatically try to go to a Category 1. The idea is to look at what does the hydrology that's there, what does it support, what does it want to be, what does the natural environment that's around it, maybe it only wants to be a Category 3. And that's really what it wants to do. So our job is to look at the scientific information and to design a project that fits within the ecosystem of what's there.
But as far as the city is concerned, wouldn't it be to their advantage if it could be developed to the highest possible?
You would want to go to the highest possible level within what was once there, within what it wants to be.
But that's a limiting factor.
That is a limiting factor, I would say. I think that makes a lot of sense. But there's another limiting factor, and that's the idea as you create a higher and higher value in a higher category wetland or a lower category wetland, I guess one is a lower number, you increase the buffers required around it. So in a sense, although you get some credit for the buffers and things like that, you start shrinking your piece of pie because you can't push those buffers onto other people's property when you enhance your property. So you're shrinking your wetland, if you will, in a sense. Do you understand what I mean? Since we have a defined area that has to include the buffer and the credit mitigation area, then if we make the buffers really small, the mitigation area gets smaller. So we may kind of balance how far do we want to go. There's also other factors, like we have ditching out there. We have a lot of fill from when the runway was there, and other factors like that, there are costs. And if you're going to change a lot, do a lot of engineering, and dig a lot of earthwork and all that, it may become more expensive than it's worth to do some of the work. So it's a balancing act.
There's a whole list of functions and values, what makes a good wetland good, and a category one you typically think of open ponded water. And we can scoop down and dig down and create. I mean, back on the examples in Mount Vernon, you saw a great big open ponded water. Those aren't ecologically high-functioning wetlands. In fact, they had to go back and tinker a lot with them to get to where they should be. You don't see a lot of vegetation around them. You don't see a lot of different types of habitat. You don't see room for amphibians or detritus material coming down. They're pretty monospecific to open ponded water. So those are technically a category one, but they're really low in some of those habitat functions and values and the water quality functions and values. So while it may be one, the regulatory agencies may not look at that as a resounding success. In fact, they said these aren't working so well, they'll go back and fix them, make them better.
Michael, with Cane Creek where it is, how does that affect what would happen out there?
Well, Cane Creek will definitely be one of the factors in thinking about connectivity of habitat and the benefit that we will gain from the water quality lift, and also by the wetland as it is enhanced and improved. It will have more ability, will likely have more ability to hold water and release it slowly over time, so it will help to keep Cane Creek's water levels more stable. And it also will be shaded out in the wetland eventually, and so that will be cooler water that's discharged to the creek. So there are a whole bunch of different factors. So Cane Creek doesn't necessarily directly relate because Cane Creek's not feeding it, the site's not right on Cane Creek, but since it's just downhill from it, it is hydrologically connected, and it will be a big part of the decision-making factor on, well, what kind of lift are we looking for here? What kind of benefits are we getting? And so that the agencies will look at that.
Okay.
Any other questions before Jennifer goes?
I guess just what, is there a big difference if just one person buys all of the property, or it's broken into smaller pieces? In other words, does that affect what the cost is going to be to create this?
I think there's definitely economies of scale. If by one person buying the site that's going to impact wetlands, or the consolidated off-site where the benefits are going to go.
So one person buys the remaining airport land, would our cost be less than if we sold it off in parcels?
Do you mean if one person buys all of the mitigation rights on this property? Or because you're talking about selling the airport land.
Well, if the airport land was bought by one individual, and they decided to buy all the mitigation rights for that piece of property, would that be cheaper than if a whole bunch of parcels are sold off?
It probably would be because of the economies of scale and administrative costs, but there's a couple things to consider. The only wetlands on the airport are the wetlands we're talking about mitigating on. So we would probably not sell those because that's our mitigation site. And the person buying the airport property doesn't necessarily need mitigation because the rest of the airport is dry. Do you see what I'm saying?
So what we're saying, there is no wetlands on the airport land
other than what we're using for this?
Other than those 7 acres that we're talking about using here. Now, we may decide we don't want to use the entire site and reserve some of it as potentially fillable, but that would all get factored into the lift and the credit and the benefit, and then we'd have to mitigate ourselves and whatnot.
So we're talking about other pieces of property.
We're talking about property
around the airport.
Yeah, like out by Ludwig Road, over on Odell, the site that was considered for Viva Pharmaceuticals, for instance. It would be other properties, just almost exclusively other properties.
So, I didn't realize that the airport land was dry.
Yeah, everything north of Boblett is dry, and the only wetlands south of Boblett, except for one tiny little one over by a sliver over by Public Works, all the wetlands on the airport property are in the site that we're considering using for mitigation.
This is an obvious question, and I know the answer, but I just want to, so just verify for me that if someone buys mitigation rights, then the property that they have that is wetlands, no matter what category, they can fill in?
So what will happen is they'll apply. We'll already have a pre-approved mitigation concept and plan that's been bought off on as a way to gain this much benefit and value, X amount of benefit and value. And that will be sitting on the sidelines as sort of like money in the bank, so to speak. And the person will go to the Corps and actually come to the city as well for a permit to fill wetlands in Blaine. And they will...
To fill wetlands in Blaine
on their property associated with, say, a shopping center or a factory. And they want to fill, say, 15,000 square feet of wetlands. They will apply for that, and they will use our site as their mitigation. They'll submit a copy of our plan and the deed area they intend to purchase the rights over with a map and say, this is the part that we're going to do. This is the plan. Here's the pre-approval for this through the agencies. And then that will be, hopefully, what triggers them to get a permit to fill the wetlands on their property. So whether they can fill the wetlands or not on their property is determined by the Corps approving a permit for them to do that. But yes, the short answer to your question is yes, they can do it once they have the permit from the Corps. And we're trying to front load the process, so it's much faster and easier for them to get that permit.
And don't they have to purchase a higher category than what they're filling?
There's a lot of nuances. They do need to do more area. They need to do more area. They need to get a higher, usually it's a higher valued wetland or higher quality wetland, but really it comes down to ecological benefit and what they call lift and just water quality and ecological quality. So you balance the scale. You might do that with a whole bunch of low quality wetland. That's not usually how it happens, but they just suffice to say they balance the scale by getting enough lift.
They get more lift than the impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you have a question?
Yeah. What about public access? Is this land off limits? Could it be a park?
No, the agencies highly discourage public access once it's set aside as a wetland restoration site or a receiving area for wetland impacts. They like it to just be left alone and not be accessed.
So we have a trail corridor adjacent to it, so it will be visually accessible. You'll be able to walk by the site, see the trees and the birds and the habitat, but you won't be able to enter it. You'll be able to appreciate it. There is a trail corridor adjacent.
Trail in the buffer with signs, public information signs and educational placards. There's a neat way to do that from the outside, but not through the middle of it.
Any other further questions?
Thank you.
I'll leave a few of my cards. If you have questions or emails or calls later on, feel free.
You get it all right. Yeah. And Dennis will probably call you with some questions. Okay, Mr. Jones, do we have anything else in the community development?
No, sir. That's my only report. Thank you.
Okay. Finance?
I have no report tonight.
City clerk?
No report.
City manager? No report.
He's on vacation.
On vacation. Okay, everyone has got a list of the calendars. I guess that we have on May the 30th at 9 a.m. the WSDOT is having a workshop on the Washington State Rail Planning. So
And this is advertised, so if we have a quorum, we're okay. If we have a quorum for this, we're okay?
Yes, that's why I noticed it in the paper.
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody's welcome to attend. Yes, Clark?
So we have to make a quorum to do it.
Yeah.
No, we have. It's been advertised, so we can have a quorum.
We can.
Okay. Okay. Next item is the public hearing. Bill, are you going to give us an introduction to the 6-year transportation improvement program?
Thank you. Okay. Good evening, Council. I gave my presentation for the 6-year TIP last when we opened the public hearing. I guess first question is, do you all have packets in front of you for the 6-year TIP? You should have been provided with a packet that had something very similar to what the PowerPoint was for the presentation, but there's a little more description about each project on it. It should be a single page for each project.
Yes, we have
it. Yeah, we have.
Okay. One of the things that we did in Public Works is we added a project from what we presented last meeting, and that's at the very end. It is intersection improvements at Bell Road and Peace Portal Drive. This is a project that is intended to give some congestion relief for when the train is moving through. It will give a dedicated right turn pocket on Peace Portal northbound, so people can get around everybody waiting to take a left-hand turn. Right now, people kind of bypass others illegally either by driving the wrong way on the other side of the road or kind of squeezing in on the shoulder, and this would give them a legal way to get around the people in the queue. It also adds a queue on Bell Road for those people waiting to go straight through after the train leaves. Gives room for them to merge to the right, it's kind of a second right-hand turn, sort of through lane, so then that way people that need to bypass them, again, don't drive in the wrong lane going down. And so this was a project we'd added since we had made the presentation to council last meeting. But again, this is trying to keep this fairly short. Again, gave the presentation to council last week describing each project, and
So we pretty well got everything at the last meeting.
There we go. Thank you. Yes. Covered everything in the last meeting. So I guess, is there any questions from the council since last meeting or any further input?
Are there any questions? Dennis, do you have a question?
Bill, the D Street and 16th intersection.
Yes.
Can that be moved up?
It could be moved up. It's, I guess, at this point, yes, it could be moved up, but at this point it is currently an unfunded project like others.
Yeah.
In it. Moving it up until we get funding doesn't necessarily change its importance on the list significantly compared to the others.
Well, I have a debate. I'll have to debate you about that.
Okay.
The way it's written, it says that that's a four-way stop. Always stop.
Well, it's not always stop. That's correct. There's three legs at the intersection.
That is the way it is. And people have complained about that up there because 16th is a stop on it.
Correct.
D Street has a stop coming from the east, but from the west it's no stop.
Okay, you're probably correct, yes.
And because the people are saying is the ones coming from the east don't necessarily stop either.
I understand.
And so with that corner the way it is, people coming out of 16th literally take their, you know, their lives in their hands.
That's why it's on the 6 years, not a project we move to the 20-year capital improvement program because it is a large site distance problem. Part of the issue is, actually, we have a proposed development on that corner, too, but it just hasn't gone past initial stages. Part of the issue is the right-of-way is narrow, and we don't own that hedge, and we haven't been able to, from what I understand, prior to before my coming here, been able to acquire that property to increase the site distance so we can remove the stop condition that's been put there in an attempt to mitigate for that. It is an issue. It's an issue that is difficult to enforce and difficult to correct beyond the signage that's there until we have the funding to actually purchase the right-of-way and realign the intersection.
If you put a stop sign so that everybody stopped, would it improve the safety of that corner?
If people are running the stop sign right now going east, it's probably not going to improve a lot. I do know, I think most people do stop there, but I do believe you are right. You have the occasional local resident that either does a coasting stop through or just simply drives through the thing. And it's an issue. It's fortunate that we have a very low traffic count there, so we don't have a large incidence.
But Bill, isn't it fairly academic until the funding comes until along? Nothing's going to happen. So
that's correct. And it is something where the funding does come along. The first thing I'll do is come to the council. We'll do a TIP amendment so that funding is represented.
For this project, it'll move up
correct.
In category.
Just like any other project on the list.
Unless we get funding, it's just a...
Right. And rather than have to come back to council because I'm making a change.
Did you say the funding for these nine projects was going to come from a bond?
It could come from a variety of sources. It could come from Transportation Improvement Board fund. It could come from federal funding, depending on which road you're talking about. Or it could come from the bonding as well. D Street is, this intersection is likely one of the, could be potentially be one of the first projects we would fund with a new bond just because of its importance and because we have a lot of control over what we use that funding for as compared to funding from state and federal sources. Again, priorities for six-year transportation improvement programs usually follow the rule of thumb of your highest priority projects that are show funding in the first and second years, of course, are at the very top. And then, of course, projects, the next set of projects you intend to go for funding for, typically your kind of your next stage of funding priority, which is why Hughes Avenue is on it like it is, because that's probably the next federal project we will do, and the next round of federal projects we apply for is this summer. So you kind of have a train of logic for what anticipated funding availability we have is programmed into this. That's my rationale for it, but and that's the best explanation for it. It is kind of a loose criteria for six-year TIPs. Now, at the same time, like I said before, if I get funding for some reason from a funding source, maybe it's freight mobility stuff, or overlay funding for U Avenue that I can fix, I'll come back to the council and we'll do a TIP amendment and move that up and then I can fund that. And that's, doesn't matter what project it is. If I have funding available, we can do that. We can even do that for projects that are in our 20-year plan that I want to move up because of, we have a funding opportunity.
Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to come forward and make any comments concerning our six-year transportation improvement program? Seeing none, I will bring the public hearing to a close. Written communications. Sherry, do we have any written communications?
We received an email dated May 14th from Tori Maxwell regarding the train station meeting on May 30th.
Thank you. The next item is the consent agenda. We're looking for approval of bills in the amount of $619,971. $1,000.72, and approval of the May 13th, 2013, and May 24th, 2013 council meeting minutes.
I move we approve the agenda.
Second.
Any other questions or comments regarding those items? Call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item is council action items. And the first item is the city manager employment contract. Mr. Sitkin or Cara, would you like to?
Good evening. I think I'm going to kick us off here. I just wanted to take a minute to recap the city manager selection process for the benefit of anyone here. Just to go back, in February of 2013, we began the advertisement for the city manager position, and that ran for a month and a half through March 15th. We had 45 applicants. 10 were selected as semifinalists to participate in a Skype interview, which we did on April 26th. We identified 4 finalists to participate, and 2, as you know, withdrew from the process for personal reasons and other opportunities that they had. So we had 2 finalists come to the city of Blaine on March 23rd and 24th, and that was Dave Wilbreck and Mike Pence. And that 2-day process consisted of a city tour, a management team interview, a stakeholder reception with the public and stakeholders, a performance exercise where they made a presentation to the council and submitted written materials, a council interview, then thorough reference checking and background checking. So on Friday, council authorized me to enter into discussions of employment with our top candidate, which was Dave Wilbreck. He accepted a tentative offer and is very excited to begin employment subject to the council approving his contract on June 24th, Monday, June 24th. So at this point, then I'll hand the podium over to John Sitkin, who's going to walk through the contract.
Thank you, Carl. John?
Thank you, Council Member. So I will hand out the draft, the contract, which one minor revision and has been reviewed by Mr. Weber. The satisfaction, so I'll walk through that with you.
Yes, you. Yes, you may.
Harry's due that respect.
Yeah.
So I'm going to walk through some of the key terms, and I think some of the grab the job description as well. Walk through the contract and keep in mind the job description and the benefits that were defined there. The position classified for city manager is having a range, salary range of $105,000 to $125,000. This agreement, I'm just going to step through the sections. Based upon that job description, and is subject to the management and professional staff policies that have been in existence since the late 90s. The start date will be June 24th, 2013, so in about a month. Salary be for the $110,000 in the lower end of the range. Same annual cost of living increases as the current non-uniform bargaining unit, and that consists of all your management staff, say Jeff and Gary, who are both not part of that bargaining unit and have independent contracts. I say Gary, but I mean the city manager. The annual merit pay increases, we left that to the council's discretion rather than setting a specific max number that is at your sole discretion. We had an evaluation process we put in here in very general. There was some discussion by Dave. I'd let you know that he really wanted to communicate back to you his appreciation for the process that the council and Turner Services went through and the public outreach, the process, the engagement with you, making a presentation. He thought that was very effective, and he thought in establishing a process for review and communicating your goals with the city manager, it might be helpful to bring Cara back. And in discussing with Dave, we concluded it was best not to put that in the agreement, but that's something you could always come to at your own decisions later. The Aries contract had a few unique provisions, that some of which we included and some of which we didn't, and I'll just go through those real briefly. One was that he makes a reasonable intent to reside in the city of Blaine. Gary's contract added that he shall reside in the, at least the school district boundaries for Blaine, and we included that here, and that was acceptable to Dave. Gary's contract had a provision that he must keep his telephone number publicly listed in the phone book. We took that out. It seemed to be a little bit of a historical provision. Most people carry cell phones and are contacted by cell phones and may not even have a landline. And council members generally always have the personal cell phones of the city-provided cell phone, the city manager. So we took that provision out. The personal development has been standard in most city contracts, that these dues and professional groups or attending travel and seminars and that kind of thing is subject to your approval in advance. The vacation leave is 2 days per month, effective on the commencement date of the agreement. He may not take vacation in excess of 2 consecutive weeks without your approval, and he can't take vacation for the first 6 months. The benefits is for he and his spouse, just like your management employee, members of the non-uniform bargaining unit, and the same life insurance and long-term disability that they would have. That bargaining unit has a deferred compensation of 5% of their gross income into deferred compensation, and they can elect either the State Department of Retirement Systems or the ICMA deferred compensation plan. So we provided that he has that same benefit as to the other members of that bargaining unit. Relocation expenses were provided up to $5,000 cap. It's to be a reimbursement, not just a check. What we did is, because he was undetermined whether he would rent a U-Haul and drive it up or hire a moving company, we provided for some round-trip airfare to come up twice with he and his spouse, the U-Haul one-way rental, or renting a moving company gross not to exceed the $5,000. And one of the things you notice that we add in here, if he leaves within a certain amount of time, it's reimbursable to the city. If he leaves within a year, voluntarily, it's 100% back, 50% after 2 years, 25% refund after 3 years. It's just one of those small incentives to stay. You're not searched for other employment. There was some provisions in prior city manager contracts for reimbursement, not only of mileage, but also of a car allowance or vehicle allowance. We just left it at a mileage reimbursement according to your current program. And that you make a city vehicle use available if his was in the shop. One of the things we did have some discussion, and I need to make the kind of a cleanup tweak in the section here, is severance pay. The city manager, unlike most employees in the state statutes, has a provision for termination. By right, if you wanted the council decided to terminate a city manager, you provide notice. It's not effective for at least 30 days, and they stay on the salary, and then they have a right to a hearing if they ask for it, and then that defers the effective date of the termination. So that's a process. They do like be similar to a laudermill hearing for some union employees, but this is a process that's in the state statute for due process. So in structuring the severance pay question, we said that if you were terminated for cause, you don't get severance pay. If you're terminated for any reason, for just any other reason, you would have 6 months severance pay. But if you resigned or terminated in the first 6 months for any reason, you don't get severance pay. So if for some reason come August or September, you didn't think he was the right person, you could terminate him. You wouldn't have to pay severance pay, but the reality is you have to give him 30 days notice. He can ask for a hearing, and it's going to end up being close to 6 months. So that was just how that was structured for balance with his concern with that process. There was a question of whether this could be a year-to-year contract, renewable annually or not. These contracts in the state statute for city managers, they are indefinite by state statute. They are hired indefinitely, and then but you can remove them by that process I just provided. So we set that here. It's an employment agreement. Position commences, it's indefinite unless you remove him or he resigns.
So that's the nature of the laws under the city manager form of government, of how the term, if you will, of the city manager is indefinite until he or she resigns or you take action and remove them. So that's the sum of it. We would ask for your approval, subject to the mayor, my final approval of the contract. The two outstanding issues are that one deletion I referenced in there. And then we're waiting for the completion of a couple background checks that were due last week. Don't expect anything significant, but if something came up and the mayor wanted to revisit it with you, we'd bring it back and defer this. But we expect that in the 24 hours. And so we'd ask, if you want to pursue a candidate, this is the contract that's been negotiated within your range of benefits, and we have it there for your approval, subject to the mayor's final approval and my final approval of the contract.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion is perfect. Back forward. All in favor?
Aye.
Any questions, I should say, first comments. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
I just want to say David asked me to relay to you his enthusiasm coming forward. He really respected this process, and I think he's very excited and looking forward to working with you.
Thank you, John, for your work. Appreciate it very much. Thank you, Cara. We had a very successful. Thank you both very, very much. Appreciate it. Yes, excellent job. We're very appreciative of the work that you did for us. Very helpful.
I think we'll even pay.
The next resolution is 1623-13, adopting the six-year transportation improvement program for the years 2014 to 2019.
So moved.
Okay, any other questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. The next item on the action items is agreement to provide reclaimed water to the Glen Eagle Villas Condominium Association. And who would like to address that?
Yes, this agreement for providing reclaimed water is similar to what we have with Semiahmoo Resort. The major difference is that they are a secondary receiver of reclaimed water. The resort gets reclaimed water on it. They get it first, and if for some reason they need all of it, then Glen Eagle Villas, we're not obligated to provide them all the water they need based on what the needs of the resort are or what the golf course are. But this is, they expressed interest in utilizing reclaimed water for their irrigation, and they kind of have a series of ponds that they currently charge with potable water. And so when we put the line in, we also put a stub out for a reclaimed water meter at that site. And so this is massaging our, kind of, I guess you call it our standard agreement now, for a secondary user of the reclaimed water. Yes, sir. No, okay.
Okay. Anyone care to?
We're selling it.
We are selling it to them at 80% potable water rate.
Okay, we're looking for the city council to authorize the city manager to enter into this agreement with the owners of the Glen Eagle Villas Condominium Association for reclaimed water.
Questionnaire.
Or do you want to make the motion first and then we can have questions?
Clark made the
motion. Clark made the motion, seconded by?
I'll second it.
Bonnie. Okay, questions. Dennis has a question.
This is not being used for watering the golf course, is that right?
This would be coming off the same pipe that's providing water to the golf course. But if the golf course uses all the water we can produce, then Glen Eagle Villas as a secondary user would be shut off until there's surplus water above and beyond what the golf course.
But what is Glen Eagle using the water for?
Using it for their, I guess they have, I don't know whether they're irrigation ponds or they're simply ornamental ponds, but they have a series of ponds that go in front of the ornamental. Okay. They're ornamental that go, you know, in front of their
but they have
and homes.
They have grass and things that they're going to use to irrigate. Is this what this is for?
I don't think so. I think it's just ornamental ponds, whereas right now they currently charge those ponds with potable water. Yeah. So rather than continuing to use potable water to charge the ponds, they're going to use reclaim.
And you said there was a, as I read this thing, there was a check to see that if the ground was saturated that they wouldn't.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to say that one more time. You faded out at the end.
The ponds, if they don't use the water because the ground is saturated, does that automatically shut off the supply to the ponds?
The ponds will be controlled by basically a float valve. So if the ponds are full, they don't get water delivered.
Right.
If the ponds go down, it will. There is different provisions within state law for the use of reclaimed water for irrigation or otherwise that you can't waste it, basically. So if you have, you can't, for instance, for irrigation purposes, you can't overwater. Well, you can't.
Yeah.
One of those provisions for ground saturation. So if they're basically infiltrating and creating groundwater issues.
My only concern was that if you fill the ponds and you keep pumping water, it's got to go somewhere.
Oh, yes. Like I said, there's a float valve. So
okay, that's all I wanted to know.
If the pond reaches a level, it shuts the water off. And then as the ponds need to be refilled, it will refill it.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you because you gave me a technical term that's part of the state.
So this would be a loss to our water department, but revenue for our wastewater.
Correct.
What's the net loss?
With the net loss? I don't.
There is
no, off the top of my head, as far as what the of what the volume they use is, but basically we sell reclaimed water at 80% the potable water price. So you know, if they use 1,000 gallons a day, there's 1,000 gallons our water department won't sell them, but our sewer department will get the equivalent of 800 gallons of funding.
So that the profit for that 80% goes
to
the sewer,
fund as opposed
and
to the
loss
water
goes
fund
to the water.
Right.
And given that the sewer fund needs the money more than the water,
that's correct.
It seems to make a lot of sense.
That's correct. It also, but it's not necessarily a loss for the water department, because even though we're not selling that water, we're not leveraging our water right for that water either, so we can sell it to somebody else.
Any other further questions or comments? Motion on the table. Let's call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item on the council action is Ordinance 2831, amending the 2013 budget.
Michael will start off and then I'll follow up.
So this is related, directly related to what Ms. Ehler talked about earlier. We have the Gateway Mitigation Project that we're moving forward on. And as we've done research, like so many things, we've come to understand a variety of different factors that are going to cost a little bit more than we had first expected. And also, we started to look at it comprehensively in the sense of program and how will this all play out. And the way that it will all play out is the city will invest upfront funds, and then we'll need to get reimbursed through the sale of the mitigation rights. And because the sale of the mitigation rights and the use of the property will benefit specific property owners, the issue of gifting of public funds comes into play. So we need to make back at least as much as we invest. And we had initially started off thinking, you know, we can get this project rolling by utilizing $10,000 that is already budgeted in the airport fund for professional services, specifically to do things like hire someone at Zaylor or to hire a wetland scientist to do a study. But the issue there is that that's budgeted, if you will, general fund money that we'd have spent that ultimately would benefit private property owners when they use the mitigation rights. It's important to keep the accounting clean and straight. And so what we're proposing is not only increasing that amount to something that would more likely serve our needs, but also to establish a fund, so that what we're proposing with this amendment is to take $25,000 from the Rural Economic Development Fund, the RED loan fund, and put that $25,000 into a gateway mitigation fund, and then we would use that $25,000 to hire a wetland consultant to develop the study, hire a permitting consultant to work through some of the nuances of the off-site mitigation that Ms. Ayler was describing. We probably will need some of that money for things like cultural resources assessment, because there are a couple of permit requirements there, just to touch on. The Corps, the Army Corps of Engineers, requires a cultural resources assessment. Doesn't matter if there's likely to be any cultural resources there or not. It's a mandatory thing you have to do before they can issue you a permit. So there are a couple of hoops that we'll jump through, and we'll need money to jump through those hoops. I think it's possible we'll come back to you in the future and ask for another amendment to fund this with a greater amount. But at this point, I feel pretty comfortable that $25,000 will get us a long ways down the road. And that's what this proposal will basically do, is initiate the gateway mitigation fund. I don't know if Jeff needs to add.
Well, just the amendment authorizes, as Michael said, the creation of a separate wetland mitigation fund, so we can keep track of those developer payments as they come in by easements. And then it uses $25,000 of the RED money. And the RED loan program has certain criteria or goals that you have to meet in order to use the money, and it certainly meets at least one, if not two, of those criteria. Namely, it adds or upgrades city non-electrical infrastructure. So it certainly meets that. And then indirectly, you could argue it meets the achieved job or creation or business retention. So I don't have any concerns with using the RED money for those purposes.
Yeah, so the staff is recommending that the council waive the second reading and approve Ordinance 13-2831, amending the 2013 budget.
So move.
Party moves.
Second.
20 seconds. Any other questions? Clark has a question.
No.
Oh, I have a question. Does the bank have to approve this?
Does the bank have to approve it? Yeah. Does the RED committee have to approve it first?
I'm just joking. So, any other questions or comments? I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. We are now going to break for executive session and to discuss acquisition of property pursuant to RCW 42.30.110 in brackets 1 and in brackets B. Are we expecting to have any action this evening? No action is expected. Approximately 10 minutes. So we'll adjourn for executive session.